I thought what might be worthwhile would be to look at one of the ideas contained in Lag BaOmer, one of the things that we can connect with. There's too much to say to look at the whole, could never get through the whole subject. And last year we tried to look a little bit at the mystical side of what the day actually means, how it fits into the 49 levels. I thought we could look perhaps at a little bit of understanding about what is the Kabbalistic tradition. You know, that this day is connected very much to the whole Kabbalistic idea. Now, that's a secret world that people don't talk about, you're not supposed to study it, certain exceptions. At least a little bit about what we can say. Can't say much about it. One or two things that we can say, and try and see how it connects to one particular Jewish obligation, which is prayer, what we call tefillah, davening. Because you'll see that that is our access into the hidden world. Thus we can try and understand something along these lines. You have to know how to light the fire. To be able to get to a world where there's a power that's hidden and bring it down, that's a very difficult trick. That means to reveal the miraculous, that's what it means. And prayer or davening is an access, it's a way of accessing the miraculous world. The last week or two we've been talking a lot about how we as a people are connected to the world of the impossible. But Monday nights, 2 weeks ago, this week, we discussed a little bit about how the Jewish experience, which means facing ordeals, and all other aspects of Jewish experience, really mean facing the impossible, and by surviving in the impossible, and bringing down the impossible, making it manifest in the world, so we live in the dimension of the impossible. And it just so happens that it says that there's certain techniques we can use that actually bring the impossible into existence. And we can do that consciously. And we don't understand that in this generation. So let's try and work it out a little bit together. The Kabbalistic world, and we can permit ourselves to talk just a little bit more openly today, since the day is in honor of one of the greatest Kabbalists of all time, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who died on this day. That's a mystical paradox in itself why we celebrate a Yotzat. We celebrate it as a day of happiness. That requires explanation also. But he wrote the Zohar. The Zohar itself means a shining light. And that's the central Kabbalistic work that we today, those Jews who do study mystical material, study. The Kabbalistic world is one which is essentially a secret world. The hardest thing to understand for us is that this thing which is the core of Judaism, it's the core of Torah, it's the neshama of the neshama. We understand that Torah is the neshama of the world. And the mystical depths of Torah actually are the neshama of Torah. That thing is hidden. It's hidden in exactly the same way as the neshama is hidden in the body. If you look at a human being, you see only the body. You really see nothing that's different than a monkey. If you look very carefully, you could see if somebody's really worked on himself and he's lifted himself to a level of nobility and refinement, well, you could see maybe a shining on his face, it says in the mystical writings, or the fact that he stands vertically, the human does. Those things are something of an indication that there's something inside, but it's very difficult to see and it's easy to miss. Yet, inside is that thing. A person knows that in himself there's something more than just what a monkey has inside. And although this generation tries very hard to forget that, and tries to emphasize the superficial side, but anybody serious about life knows that there's something inside that really means something. You can't put that into words, because you can't put it into superficial terms. You can't bring it down into physicality. You can only know it with a higher knowledge. You can't prove it to anyone. That's an essential characteristic of the hidden world, is that it must remain hidden. Try and understand this idea more deeply. But that fact, the way the human soul, the way the neshama is inside the body, that's the way the Kabbalistic tradition is inside Torah. If you try and look for it and make it explicit, you'll never find it explicit. It says that when a Rebbe, a Kabbalistic teacher, great mystical spiritual teacher, teaches his students Kabbalistic wisdom, it says, Moshe Loi Roshe Prakim. He's only allowed to give him the chapter headings. That's all he's allowed to do. He may not tell the students, at least that's the way it seems when you learn that Mishnah, it seems that what he does is he gives over the general direction of the Kabbalistic system. But he's not allowed to tell him the depth of it. He can't tell him the details. So people misunderstand.
everything in the Kabbalistic system is misunderstood. Torah is misunderstood generally. But in the Kabbalistic area, there you can be sure that the idea will be misunderstood. And here people misunderstand. They think that since it's a secret thing, so it has to remain secret. That means like an esoteric sect, where the teacher is not allowed to tell the secrets because they must always remain hidden by the select, among the select few. But it doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that he cannot give him the details because they cannot be said in words. That's the essential feature of the Kabbalistic wisdom, is that even if you try to put it into words, you can't. Because to put something into words, you have to bring it down into a finite experience. You have to put it into just so many words. And that's not infinite. That's not something that has a higher wisdom attached to it. If you can say it in so many words, you can tie it down to this number of words on a page. That's just like you can't tie a human being down into just so much meat that carries him around. It's not a description of the human. So the depth of Torah can't be put across that way. It means the Rebbe just gives a hint to the Talmid because that's the maximum that he can do. He's not trying to keep a secret. He wants to teach his Talmid. He wants him to know. He wants him to be a man of knowledge, a person of knowledge. But he can't tell him the secrets because there just aren't words for those things. That's the idea. It means that you're dealing, when dealing with a hidden world, the only way you can ever discover that world is deep inside yourself. All the Rebbe can do is sort of nudge his Talmid until he falls into it by himself. But he can't give him the details, because the details just aren't tangible. When the Talmid knows the details, he'll understand suddenly what the Rebbe's been saying all along, and he won't be able to teach it to anybody else either. Right? That's the loneliness. That's the loneliness of the spiritual world. The paradox is that when one knows another person well, when you know someone else very well, actually the only way you know what their depth is from experiencing your own depth. You can never experience their neshama. You only experience the way they put across their neshama to you. You only experience the way their body moves and the words they say, but you never feel their neshama. How intimately you know someone, for how long you've known them, you never actually directly make contact with a person inside. You just make contact with a body, with the tools, but you never experience the person. But the way you know what's inside that person is because you know what's inside you. You know how deep you go. And you know how what trouble you have reflecting your real self in finite tools, in words or in movements of the body. So you know what's inside them only through knowing yourself. That means the whole of knowledge of the world starts with self-knowledge. That's why the mystical system is always a system of looking at the way you function and then understanding the rest of the world. It's an amazing thing. It means when you're very close to someone, the reason you really have a sense of who they are is only because you have a sense of what you are and who you are. But you can't do it directly. And yet, it's a very deep bond. It couldn't be deeper. So, the way to relate to the world, the person wants to understand depth in the world, the first thing they have to do is discover the hidden depth. They have to discover this thing that's always hidden. The hidden world is called Sod. In the Kabbalistic writings, in Torah, always the hidden Kabbalistic world is called Sod, which means secret. And that's the classical source of misunderstanding. People think it means, again, a secret because no one's told you. That when one day you're old enough and you're wise enough and you've got enough study, Torah study under your belt, and then maybe they'll tell you. Then it won't be a secret anymore. Of course, it doesn't mean that. Secret means something that's always a secret, that no one can ever tell you, that even when they tell you it's a secret, or if they try and tell you. Because essentially it's a hidden world and it must remain hidden. So it obviously means that to get in contact with something that's so deep and so hidden, it takes special tools. To be able to penetrate into a world where what's going on is infinite, which is the Jewish experience, that's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. So you need very special tools. And we have the tools. Torah study is one of the tools. Even when a person doesn't study the Kabbalistic depth, he studies Torah in an explicit sense, but the depth of it comes through. When a person does a mitzvah, it's another way of getting in contact, the Nefesh HaChaim says. When a person does a mitzvah, he brings down the Kedusha, he brings down what's called an Or Makif. Speak even more openly if the types weren't here. It means a light that surrounds the person. Again, you mustn't understand these words physically. It's very dangerous to do so. Literally, definitely, but physically not. There's a certain light that surrounds the human being. It's a surrounding light. In the mystical writings, it says that the light shines into the body from the outside to the middle of the body. And then there's a light from the inside that shines out to the middle and the two meet. Any vessel, it says, has light inside, and that's how the light shines. Two kinds of light, inside light, outside, very deep, hidden secrets contained here. But when a person grasps the external aspect of something that has a hidden neshama, then you get the neshama as well. The wonderful examples of this. First of all, let's understand what it means in practical terms. Let's say, if you take a person, how would you get hold of somebody? Let's understand carefully. How does a Jew approach this? Again, you'll see paradox of the spiritual world. When you want to get into the hidden mystical wisdom, what you do is you take hold of the superficial physical world. It's the only way to do it. And that's what gives you access into the hidden world. If you try and get into the hidden world with your crude and coarse physical tools from the outside, you can't get there. But if you get in touch with the physical world, so then automatically you have an access to the hidden world. Remarkable paradox. Simple, crude example would be, if you want to get hold of a human neshama, let's say you really want to get a person, you want to hold and have and make contact with in some way, the neshama that's inside a human being, you need the body. You need the body. And if you take him by the hand and move him from one place to another, the neshama will move also, even though you don't know where it is, and you can never see it directly. But if you move the body, which is no different than a monkey's body, but if you take that body and you move the body, you've moved the neshama. But it's the only way to move the neshama. Let's say you want to access the neshama, you want to know what's inside the person you speak to. He'll speak to you. When he speaks to you, all that's happening is a few muscles of his face are twitching, that's all. It's a few sound waves penetrating the air, and a parts of a body, a face, no different than a trained animal. But it's enough to give you access and insight into what's in the neshama. But without the physical organs, without the physical tool, you have no insight, no access. Remarkable idea. That's how we understand. When you do a mitzvah, person does a mitzvah, so the inner potential, the hidden world, comes along with a mitzvah. When you study Torah, even when you study the most superficial levels of Torah, the hidden depth comes with it. There's an amazing example. There's a Rashi in Bereishis, in Genesis. Rashi explains a certain verse that talks about the water, the firmament. You remember the creation? It talks about how the firmament was separated. So Rashi tells you the distance between the two firmaments. That means when the Shemayim was being formed. So in the one level of whatever that dimension means, and another level, there's a certain separation. I think Rashi says it's three tvachim, or three, it's Gimel, it's Bas, I think he says. There's a certain separation between those two worlds. That's what Rashi tells you. So the Ramban comes along, one of the great commentaries that lived around the same time as Rashi, and he says, when you read this Rashi, don't try and understand it. That's what he says, impossible to understand. You hear? Let's see what's going on. Here's Rashi, comes along to explain the Chumash to you. So you're reading the Chumash, you come across something that's impossible to understand, that Hashem put this kind of heavens in this place, and then three measures away he put another. What does that mean? I don't know what it means. So Rashi comes along and he says, tells you exactly the distance. That's his explanation. He's explaining Rashi's job, what he's undertaken to do, is to make things clear to you. He's come along to explain. He wants to give you Torah. He wants to make it difficult. He's not coming along to hide. He wants to explain. So the Ramban comes along and he says, when you get to that Rashi, don't try and understand. It's impossible to understand. Now, what's going on? What was Rashi doing? Giving you something that's impossible to understand. You hear the question. And what's the Ramban? So, I heard from a very great man. A man actually is a great Kabbalist, but he never admits it at all. As all the Kabbalists do, or don't. They tell you that they don't know anything at all. So you never know. Until you know yourself. By the way, if anybody tells you that he does know, then for sure he doesn't know. I heard from a very great man, the way to understand it is as follows. When you take the outer shell of the thing, when you take the body, the inner content comes along automatically. And the way he explained it was beautiful. He said it's like this. I gave you the example of taking the body. He gives the example of food. Food. When you eat, what happens? You see that the world is divided, built in such a way, that when you relate to the world with food, so the following experience happens. First you chew the food and taste it, and then you swallow it, and it goes into automatic. That means, first phase is where you do it voluntarily, you decide to eat it, you chew it, you taste it, all under voluntary control. After it goes through the mechanism of swallowing, it's all automatic. But plenty of things happen from there. The food gets broken down chemically, it gets digested, gets absorbed, gets sent all to the right parts. A fantastic job happens that you're not aware of at all. He said, that's exactly the way Torah is. When you grapple with a piece of Torah, you taste it. You learn a piece of Torah, you taste it, you chew it, you turn it over in your mind, you examine it this way, that way. That's what Gemara is. People study for years and years, trying to get their minds sharp enough to understand what's going on. So you grapple with it and you taste it. The mind actually tastes the material. But, along with that portion that you taste and you do voluntarily, and you try and get your mind around, but there's an inner force and energy that is in those words that you can't feel at all, but that works on automatic. You don't know where it's happening, you don't know how it's working, but it works on you automatically and it feeds the neshama. Just like when you're digesting your food, you don't know how and what, but it's feeding the body. So, too, this is what happens. So now this man, that's basic. That's a basic explanation of how the hidden dimension comes along with it. So he said, there are certain parts of Torah that are like vitamins. Sometimes a person needs a vitamin tablet. Vitamins you don't taste. You just swallow it down. Now you get no taste out of it. You don't chew it. But you know you need this thing. You swallow it. It does the job. Says the Ramban. That rush is a vitamin tablet. That's what it is. Swallow it. You need to know it. Huh? I mean, you hear what's going on? You can't be expected to understand it. And Rashi's not putting it there for you to understand. But he knows that your neshama needs that piece of information. Amazing thing. Your neshama needs that piece of information. So read it. Take it in. But don't try and understand it. It's a vitamin pill. Well, you want to taste it. You're going to chew it. Sour. Bitter. Won't understand it. Take the pill, swallow it, and the vitamins will operate. You read that Rashi, take the information in, and the Shama benefits. You don't know how, but that's what happens. Remarkable thing. The Gaon says the same idea applies to when you do a mitzvah. Incredible thing. When a person does a mitzvah, we know that in every mitzvah is an object, it's a physical act. Almost all the mitzvahs are physical. There are very few mitzvahs that you do with a heart or mind. Very few, maybe count them on one hand. Love of Hashem, fear of Hashem. Remembering certain things every day. There are a few mitzvahs you do with the mind, but almost all are done with the body. It's a remarkable religion, that. Now, that center of Judaism is not sitting and transcending or meditating. It's getting the body to operate. Remarkable. But when you move that body, the spiritual world moves as well. Exactly like when you take a person, you move his body from one place to another, then a shaman goes with it. So it is with a mitzvah. You do a physical action, your hand moves from here to there, and it deposits a few coins from you to somebody else. Or you take your body and you set it in a sukkah. What happens is the spiritual world moves. You don't know how, but that's exactly how it moves. And it's the only way to move the spiritual world. It's the only way. If you try and do it with meditational effort, you're limited. But if you do it by doing a simple action, even if you don't understand the action, all you have to know is that it's a mitzvah, Hashem wants it, you have to do this now, this and this action is what He wants, and you have that intention, the whole cosmic system moves, it dances, and the whole cosmic structure changes. So the Gaon illustrates this in the most beautiful way. The Gaon of Vilna, he says the following thing. There's a pasuk, it says, "Bechol drochecha da'ehu," in all your ways know Him, it means know Hashem, "Vehu yiyasher ochosecha," and He will straighten out your paths. That's what it says. Amazing, possible. In all your ways, know Him. In all your ways, know Him. And He will straighten out your pathways. What does that mean? Says the Gaon, it means the following thing. Very, very amazing thing. This is how to, the Gaon, as you know, was one of the masters of the hidden wisdom. And the way he explains this verse is on those lines. You'll see that it's not quite the fourth level of mystical wisdom. It's the third level, which is that which works through the mechanism and structure of the words themselves, to give you an insight into the depth. But for us, the third out of four is not bad, if we can get a little taste of that. He explains the following thing. The fourth is called secret. There's no way we can talk about that. But we can talk a little bit about the third level. And he explains it as follows. In all your ways, know Hashem. Know Him. Says the Gaon, why does it say, know Hashem in all your ways, and He will straighten out your paths? It doesn't say ways anymore. It says, derech is what you have to know, but or chosech, or your pathways, is what Hashem will fix up. What's the difference? Says the Gaon, in Torah, derech means a highway. It means a main thoroughfare. Or chosech means the byways, the hidden pathways. So he says it means this. Know Hashem in all your main thoroughfares in the highway, that means the mitzvahs, that means the things that are explicit, when you learn Torah, that which is revealed, and He'll take care automatically of all the secret hidden byways. You don't have to worry about them. You hear that? Beautiful. How does he see it in the words? Because it says like this. Bechol drachecha da'ehu. With all your ways, the main body of Torah, know Him. Da'ehu is spelt in Hebrew, dalet ayin, which means to know. And who is heivav? Know Him, Hashem. Heivav. So it says the Gaon, hey and vav means the five books of Chumash, the five books of Torah, and vav is the six books of Mishnah. That's the revealed part of the Torah. The five books that you can read and the six books of Mishnah. That's what it is. That's what you must know. Da, know what? The five revealed and the six revealed. That's what. Vehu yiyasher o chosecha. And He will straighten out your pathways. What does it say? Vehu yiyasher o chosecha. Hey vav aleph. That means that Hashem, hey vav, the same as before, with an aleph on the end, the secret, silent, hidden world of aleph, is what will straighten out all your pathways. That means, you hear the words themselves are saying it, but they're saying it secretly. It's a very beautiful thing. You should look up the pasuk in Mishlei when you go home to see how beautifully it works. You must know the hidden, the revealed, and then what will happen is Hashem will miraculously feed in the hidden as well. And it's all there in the words, but hidden in the words, because you don't hear the aleph. When you say Da'ehu, the who sounds the same as the who in the second part of the river. There's got a hidden aleph that you don't see. You don't hear it. That's the way the mystical system works. In other words, the job of a Jew is not to focus on the mystical system. It's to focus on the practical world. And then what happens is the mystical world moves as well. Now, the practical application of this that I wanted to just discuss for a few minutes this evening is the direct access system that a Jew has to this world, and that's called davening. That's called tefillah. When a Jew davens, when you pray, that's pray is a very, English words are battered into insensitivity, but davening, tefillah, when you do that, right, which is a meditational exercise that takes you to the peak, connects you with the hidden world, so then you bring down the light of the impossible. You bring down that light, right? That light of miracles, what's called a light, it's called an or, Torah is called a light, or Yiraisa, means a light. You bring that down by davening. How does that work? We need to emphasize this very strongly, because if there's one forgotten art these days, it's davening. Nobody knows how to daven anymore. In this generation, people pray, they do it like spitting out the same old words in a very, very meaningless way. By rote, saying the same old things without any meaning, without any confidence that it'll make any difference. Who really believes when they stand up to daven Shmoyis Hashem is really going to listen to you? And he's really going to change his mind? He's going to do what you want and not what he thought of doing? You really believe? You hear that? That's what you're supposed to believe. You are supposed to approach Hashem. You're supposed to move three steps back, three steps forward. And you're supposed to face up to Hashem and say, listen, Hashem, I need the following things. And this and this and this is what's going to be good for me and for the world. And I want you to listen to me and do that. And I want you to change your mind. After all, you're trying to change his mind, right? You're not giving him any new information. He knew that you needed these things before. He just didn't think it was suitable for you. Before you, is that right? Or what? Maybe you think that you're going to get this thing anyway without, so why daven? Why is davening requests? You're asking him for things. What is it, some kind of a joke? You're asking him for things that he intended to give you anyway, or he intends not to give despite asking? What kind of joke is that? That's not our idea of davening. Our idea of davening is you speak to Hashem, he changes his mind. Before you asked him, he wasn't going to give you this thing. And he listens to you and changes his mind. That's what davening is. But it only works if you believe it. You have to mean it. If you stand up there and spit out the same old words thinking about something else, not going to change his mind. We have to understand the subject. That's the deepest touch we can have with the mystical world, right? The deepest access that we can penetrate in and change the world, the physical world, by entering into the world of the genes and readjusting. It's a very difficult problem. How does it work? Gemara says that if a person takes three steps back when he's finished davening, and then he takes three steps forward without pausing, it's like a dog returning to his vomit. That's what the Gemara says. That's what it says. If the whole experience to you is just getting the same words out, and you're back and forth and finished, it's like a dog returns to you. And when a dog returns to his vomit, he eats it. That's what the Gemara means. That's what your davening is like. If that's what the experience is going to be, so then you can do that for the rest of your life. Not going to make any difference. That's not what we're aiming for. A Jew has to have the confidence to know that he's going to change the world by this thing that he's going to say. He has to mean it, and he has to understand that it's going to be that way. To understand. If a person understands this, the world will change. That's a guarantee. That's a Torah promise, not some mystical thing. It's an absolute Torah guarantee. If you understand this and know how to do it and mean it, you'll be able to change the world. Definitely, that's what it's there for. On the contrary, in many mystical sources, it says that davening is a natural mechanism. You hear that? It's not like expecting a miracle. It's a natural part of the way the world works, that if you ask, Hashem will do for you. If you ask correctly. Remarkable thing, that's a very important skill. Nothing works without that. And that's what we've forgotten. Let's try and just begin and open it up a little bit if we can this evening. The questions that we have to ask here, this is a very difficult subject, we have to stay together very carefully now. The questions that we have to ask over here are as follows. I have to understand the questions well, otherwise we're not going to understand anything. The questions are as follows. First of all, just look at the naked meaning of the word. Tefillah in Hebrew, the word tefillah has got two opposite meanings. Two completely contradictory meanings. The word means the totally unexpected. That means beyond all natural means. Right? Like it says in Chumash, Ro'is panecha lo pilalti. I never expected to see your face again. When Yaakov saw his son Yosef after 22 years, he said, I never dreamed of seeing your face. In other words, what's happening here is a totally unexpected, miraculous event. That's what the word means. Pilalti, plilim. It means, on the other hand, the word in Hebrew, anyone who knows any Hebrew knows that the root plili means a legalistic thing that has to be. In Hebrew today, in modern Israel, there's a thing called avon plili. No, that means in English, I think you've got a felony. It's like a major crime. Right? Which means that it's a part of the legal system. Which means that if you do this, then this is the mechanism that will happen. The punishment is such and such. Which means this is a very strange word. This word in Hebrew means two opposite, right? Well, the whole spiritual world is a world of paradox. But here you see it very sharply. A person stands up to daven, he's doing something that is calling down something that's impossible, that has no natural mechanism. That's what the word means, something that you could never expect. And the word also means that which you've got a full right to expect, it must be so. How do we understand that paradox? First question. Second question is what we touched on before. How can you change Hashem's mind? But let's understand carefully. Hashem is absolute, right? He knows what you need. He knows what's good for you, knows what you need. Which means he's decided what he's going to give you already. It's a foregone conclusion what you're going to get. You stand up and daven for whatever it is that you need, or you think you want, or you think you need, or maybe you do need. If you need that thing, he's a loving father. That's how we understand Hashem. He's a father who loves you. Any father who loves a child is definitely going to give the child what's best for it. The child doesn't have to ask. If a father knows that the child needs this and this, he's definitely going to make sure that the child gets it. It doesn't make any difference if you ask. And on the contrary, if it's not good for him, the father won't give it, even if he asks. Is that right? When a child picks up a dangerous piece of broken glass on the street, you know, old broken green bottle, child wants to look through the green glass because the whole world looks wonderful when you look through it, the mother or the father's not going to let the child have that piece of broken glass. He might cut his wrist with it. He might cut himself dangerously, no matter how much the child pleads. But the parent's not going to give him something that's bad for him. So what's going on? You stand up and you ask Hashem for something. He knows what you need. If you need it, he's going to give it to you anyway. And if it's not good for you, no matter how much you ask, he's not going to give you something that's not good for you. Are you with me? Anybody besides you? That's the problem. That's the question. So Jews for thousands of years, certainly this generation, thousands, millions of Jews get up every day to daven, thousands anyway, and they speak to Hashem like this in an impossible system. They're asking Hashem for something, but really understanding that it can't make any difference. And logically, how can it make a difference? That's what we have to try and understand. So there are two angles that we have to understand here, and this is a fascinating insight into the spiritual world. The two things we have to understand are as follows. Hashem runs the world in such a way, this is what we taught in the Kabbalistic system. Hashem runs the world in such a way that he will only do if we ask for it. But that's the principle. There are places where it says that if nobody would ask for rain, it wouldn't rain at all. The only reason it rains on earth is because someplace somebody's asking for rain. But if nobody would ask for it, it wouldn't rain. A remarkable thing. Why? Because Hashem wants us to be involved in running the world. That's why he put us here in the first place. He could have done the whole thing himself or been whatever he needed without us, whatever he wanted. But he puts us here and makes the whole thing subservient to us. That's how we do mitzvahs also. That's why we do mitzvahs also. But the mitzvah of davening is specifically getting us involved in running the world by having to ask. By having to make the connection, we bring down that which would not have been there otherwise. Not that he would have given it to you, even though it's good for you. No, he wouldn't have given it to you otherwise. That's what it says. He only gives because you ask. Why? Because you're part of the creation. It's not that he's running the show and you make no difference. Whether you ask or not, you'll get it anyway or you won't get it anyway. Adarav, exactly the opposite. He runs the world in such a way that only because you ask will he give it to you. And he'll suffer through seeing you do without, even though he knows you need, if you're not going to ask. Where do we see it? It says in Chumash a remarkable thing. It says that when Adam was created, you know, people think that he was born in the Garden of Eden. Gan Eden, he woke up and he saw this luscious garden. It says clearly not like that in Chazal. It says that when he was born, he saw only dust. Dry earth, that's all he saw. There wasn't a plant to be seen. Even though you may ask that he was created on Friday, and it was 2 days before, a couple of days before that Hashem had created all the grasses and trees and flowers, says no. What had happened? Chazal said the following thing. All the plants on earth grew as seeds, but they grew until they reached the surface of the ground and they stopped growing. Right? They didn't break through the surface of the ground. Why? Because there was no rain. That's what it says. Ki Adam ayin lavedes Adam. There was no man to work the land. There was no man to work the land. What did Chazal say work means? Davening. Prayer. Because avoida, the Hebrew word work, is always translated in the Chazal means avoida shebalev. It's the work in the heart. Which means that, what's going on? The following thing. The world was created. The plants didn't grow because there was no rain. Why was there no rain? Because there was no man yet to ask for rain. Adam was a very sensitive individual. Right? That's putting it mildly. He woke up and he saw the situation. He dumped for rain. It rained and everything grew. And he revealed the world. He revealed the whole world of growth. What do we see? Had he not asked for rain, nothing would have grown and the world would have died. That means Hashem put his creation into effect, but he put man at the final stage to activate everything that he created before. If man, and how did he activate it? What's the final common pathway? Asking. That's all. That's all. Asking. Realizing that he needs it, putting himself into that relationship with Hashem and asking for it, and then it rains. That's what it says. So what do we have here? We have a fantastic, amazing paradox. Davening is a thing. It's called, on the one hand, loy pilalti. It means something you never could dream that would be because it's such an amazing thing. It means that, could you imagine such a thing? You stand up and ask Hashem for something and He listens to you because you asked? That's what it means, something that seems impossible. But on the other hand, that's the way He set the world up. So of course it means something that's legalistic and mechanical. He built the world that way that it's not going to be unless you ask for it. And only that way. So the word has two opposite meanings because that's exactly what it is. That's one understanding we have to have. Second understanding, even more fascinating, is like this. Of course, we realize from what we've said that you can't get this amazing thing to happen that has got this incredible paradox in it just by spitting out a few old, bored, and tired words. But that's not the way it works. To get up there and say the same old words, even with a little bit of feeling, that's not going to make Hashem change his whole world. It's not the way it goes. So how do you do it? How do you go about this thing? You want access into the hidden world? You want to open up the spiritual world and have that thing that's called Shefa, that amazing cosmic force flow down? How do you do that? So for that, you have to move into the hidden world. A person wants to bring energy out of the depths of a world that's hidden. You have to do it in the same way. You have to get into that world. And davening, the meditation that's involved when a person prays, davens, that is an access into that world. Let's just try and understand one dimension of how this works. Great Hasidic leaders in the past used to explain it this way. They put it very simply. There's a fantastic depth in it. We think of davening as changing Hashem's mind. But that's a conventional thing. Please, Hashem, I need this. So, like, do it for me. You weren't going to do it, but I'm asking you to do it. Explain, no, it's not like that. Because with all that we've said, you can't change his mind. What you can do is you can change you. In other words, like this. What the act of davening means is, it means to go so deep into your own neshama, to go so high into your own being, that when you come down again, you're not the same as you were before. That means you're not reforming his opinion or his mind, you're reforming who you are. The new person that you are now could have a new dispensation. That's the mechanism. Before you asked Hashem for this thing that you want now, maybe you didn't deserve it because maybe it wasn't good for you. Maybe you're asking, let's say, for wealth. Wealth is a big danger. Or some physical thing that you think you need in the world. So any object in the world can be very dangerous. Now, poverty is a danger. Riches is a danger. Everything is an ordeal. Maybe you didn't deserve that ordeal. Deserve it, couldn't use it, it wouldn't have been good for you. So what happens is this. You move up into the core of your own being. You transcend, you meditate, you go so deep into your own consciousness of what it is that you really are and really want, such that you reformulate what you are. You come down as a new individual. That new individual could handle a whole new world. You hear what's going on here? You're not convincing him something that he didn't think before. If he thought it before, he thinks it now also. What you're doing is you're showing him that you're a new person. You're not the person you were before. This new individual has worked on himself to be a new individual, could handle more power in the world. Whichever aspect of power it is that you want, whatever tools you're asking for. You could use them correctly for his sake. And for that he'll give them to you. How do you do this? What does it mean going up in meditation? We have a practical answer to this question. And the practical answer is as follows. If you think about it, you'll see that the davening doesn't seem to be a meditation. We go through the form of the davening. Let's leave out for now the first three brachas of the Shemoneh Esrei, the last three. Those are a special subject in their own right. But the middle 13, right, the middle are requests. Now, if we're talking about meditation, that means getting up to the root of who you are. What's that got to do with asking for things? You hear the question? Maybe you should sit there and say a certain word over and over. Or focus on a certain thing. Or say one of Hashem's names maybe many times till you get very high. But that's not what we do. We ask for things. So why is asking for things in meditation? That's a deep problem. Now the mystics explain the following idea, and we'll finish with this position. What asking means is, what are you activating when you ask for something? What part of the neshama is speaking? It's a part of the neshama that's called desire. What they call rotzon. Rotzon. Rotzon means the source of everything. It's amazing. In Hebrew it means two things. The literal meaning of the word is desire. It means what you want. But actually it means the source of being. Rotzon, the beginning of the word is ratz, which means the beginning of movement. Actually, the mystics point out that rotzon equals, in the numerical system, which is a mystical technique, it equals mekor, which means the source. It also means the womb, by the way. Also means the womb. That means desire is the womb or the source of everything. It also equals Hashem's name. Rotzon also equals Hashem's name. But it means all these things because that's the source of being. Desire, if you think about it, is the first point in the neshama. Nothing comes before what you want. Something that you want because you want it. Not something you want for some other reason. Stop for a moment and think. Why do you want something in the world? Think of something you really want badly. Ask yourself why you want that thing. You'll see almost invariably it's because you want something else. Because that thing will provide something else that you want. Why do you want that thing? Why do you want that thing? Because that'll provide something else that you really want, right? But eventually you'll come to something that you want because you want it. Is that right? Unless you just never thought at all. But anybody who ever thinks knows that there's a chain of things that you want, right? Each thing you want is, let's say you want, let's be crude, let's say you want money. What for? What for? If you just want money for the sake of money, you're sick. Right? That's a completely invalid, that's a need for power, and you never intend to spend it. Right? The Bale Musa say you've got a deep problem. That's a person who wants the currency and is never going to actualize it into anything. That's a person who will never actualize his own potential in the world. But let's say you're not like it. Let's say you're more normal than that. You want money because you want to buy something. Oh, that's why you want the money. Why do you want to buy that thing? Why do you want to buy that thing? Some other reason you want to impress somebody. I don't know. Whatever it is you want, for some other reason. Why do you want to do that thing? But sooner or later, you'll come to something that you don't know why you want. You just want that. That's you. That's you. That's your neshama. The thing you want for no reason is you. You don't go deeper than that. There's no prime reason that moves to that. You want that thing because that's you. That's the deepest, which means the deepest expression of what a person is what he wants. The root thing that you want, the root things that you want because you want them, is exactly what you want. It's a very embarrassing exercise, by the way. I don't mean to upset you on Lag BaOmer. But if you go home, let's leave it till tomorrow night. Sit down tomorrow night after Lag BaOmer when the spirit takes hold again. And ask yourself what you really want in life. It's a very embarrassing exercise. You really want Hashem's covered in the world? You really want Mashiach? You really want the Gilu of Kvod Shemaim in the world? That's what you really want? You'll find that the difference between what you want and the average gorilla wants, usually, the gap, unfortunately, is very small. That's what we've come to. That's what we've come to in this generation. But that's the truth, unfortunately. But that is who you are. That's who you are. So how do you change you? How do you change you? Let's permit ourselves just for a second a mystical illustration. The mystics say that Rotson is the highest point of who you are. It's where the tefillin are, where the baby's skull is open. That's where it is. It's the top of what's called the dais, the line of mystical wisdom. We don't normally talk this way, but I don't actually know anything about these things myself. I'm just telling you things that other people who do know have told me. They also told me that they didn't know anything, but I know that they did know. But I'm telling you the truth. The way they put it is that there's something at the very top of what the human being is that's called Rotzon. From there is where you flow. All the energy flows. You want, and therefore you think, and you plan, and this and that, and eventually you do, and you go, and you acquire, and you do. You achieve. You produce. But it starts with what you want. So the mystics say, after the spark of energy, which is what you want, the rest is all automatic. If you want a crude analogy, it's like when you want to do something with your body. Let's say you want to move your hand. So what happens is, first of all, you have the motivation, the desire in the brain. A certain cell fires, and from there on, it's automatic. The cell sends an impulse to some other nuclei, and the nerves, and the muscles, and eventually the hand moves. But you can't stop it. You can't control it or stop it after that. The only point that's you, the only point that you control, is the initial flash of motivation. From then, it's just physiology. It's just a machine. In the neshama, it's the same thing. after you want something, the rest is automatic. You scheme this way, you scheme that way, you try and go about it this way, you refine the tools, you refine the way you go about it, you do it more crudely, with more consideration, with less, but ultimately you're just functioning as an animal, right, as a machine, going about the thing that it is that you want. The only way you really make a difference is changing what you want. If you change the way you go about getting what you want, you're just making the operation more slick. You're just going about making the machine more efficient. Huh? But you're not changing who you are at the core. The only way to change what you are is what you want. To change what you are. How do you change what you want? How do you change what you want? That is you. That's davening. Davening means you go up in your consciousness so ruthlessly, honestly, that you come face to face with what it is you really want. And you change it. How do you do that? When you get up to that core, what you work on is desire. You say, Hashem, I want this, and this, and this, and this. And what you mean is, I want it for you. Rebbe Shachaim says that everything you ask for, in Shmoneh Esrei, if you think about it, you're asking Hashem for things you need. You want das, wisdom, right? You want health. You're asking for those things. You also ask about half of the things you ask for, that Hashem should reveal himself in the world, the Mashiach, Yerushalayim, or go back to Eretz Yisrael. That's what you ask Hashem for. You want that also. It's hard enough to mean those things. But the things that you want for yourself, wisdom, health, financial security, which is what you ask for, the Nevi Shechaim says, what you mean is, you want it for Hashem's sake. What you're asking, did you think for a moment you're getting up there and say, Hashem, I need money because I want to buy this and that crude object in the world? That's what you've got the audacity to ask Hashem? That's what you're standing in tefillah asking Him? You want health so that you can be fit enough to do what? You've got to do some physical activity that doesn't achieve anything meaningful in the world? That's a tremendous chutzpah to ask Hashem for those things. Nevi Shechaim says, that's not what you mean. What you mean is, Hashem, I want to be healthy because I want to do what you want done in the world. I want financial security because I want to be able to buy the things that I need for your service. That's why you want things in the world. Amazing idea. What it means is, you're taking your own desires, expressing them as subservient to what Hashem wants. Which means that you're making your desires His desires. It means you get up to a level where what you want ends, you dissolve it, you open it up, and you let what Hashem wants come in. That's a meditation. That's davening. That's davening. What happens at that moment is two things. One, you're no longer the same. Instead of being the machine, the mechanical system that you were before, that wanted this thing for whatever crude and coarse reason, right, for your own selfish reasons, you now open up that thing and become something else. So you've changed yourself. And what have you changed yourself? What have you become? You've become one in a line, part of a line that extends from the creator of the world to you. You've opened up what you want. You've totally dissolved your own ego. You've dissolved what you want for your own crude ends. And let what He wants come in. Huh? Which is exactly what we spoke about for the last 2 weeks. The idea of moving into the impossible. Of bringing in the miraculous. Of letting Hashem manifest in the world. That's what davening means. So that's what the exercise is. Our understanding of davening is that you stand up there and you call upon Hashem to activate the system that He's put into effect in the world. That you know that if you don't ask for this, He won't do it. Why? Because first of all, you as you are, can't get this thing. And because He's promised us that He won't do it unless you ask. And asking means changing yourself. It's a fantastic lifetime training to be able to get the smallest power in davening. And that's why this generation is so poor at it. You just summarize by saying that perhaps one thing we can get out of Lag BaOmer, that's a day when the light shines through. That's a day when in the misery of Sphira, that's a hard and tense time when many bad things happen. And when the thing that we focus on is working on ourselves. All 49 different aspects of human activity. So when you can put together the core of what you are and change that to something new. Just a little bit higher than it was before. So you bring in a light that wasn't there before. You have to do it through mitzvahs. You need to do it through Torah learning. You need to make yourself more sensitive. And you need to do it through davening. And you need an organized program. A person who eats unkosher food. Never going to achieve this. Tonight's talk is a joke for somebody who's eating dry food. It says that anybody who eats unkosher food, the being is so insensitive to these ideas that he'll never feel it. You need that. That's the first place to begin. After you get that, you need the next stage. Person needs a connection to Shabbos. If he doesn't experience Shabbos, he's going to feel any transcendence. You need a graded sequence of exercise. A whole system. A woman doesn't go to mikveh. So the death forces are so manifest in her body. And in a relationship with her husband, she won't feel anything sensitive. A person like that doesn't belong in a discussion of how they're going to change the infinite point of their own center when the kli, the vessel that they're living in, is putting in such an effect of dulling the senses. Person has to prepare the vessel first. That's what we started off by saying. First you have to schlep along the vessel. Inside that will come automatically the light. After you give the light a little chance to come along by pulling the vessel into the right place, so then inside that a person could start focusing on the light, but first you have to switch it on. There was a man a few years ago in America who spoke to a certain Rosh Hashiva, and he told him the following thing. A certain businessman, wealthy man, and he decided he needed to do more. Something happened in his life and he wanted to do more. So he went to this man, I think a certain well-known Rosh Hashiva, used to an expert at financing yeshivas. And during the conversation he said to him, listen, I'm prepared to take on one new thing in my life. What mitzvah should I do? People tell me the most important things are the Jewish menstrual separation laws, the Nidah laws, eating kosher food and keeping Shabbos. I'm prepared to do one of them. You tell me which one. And imagine being faced with a choice like that. Somebody asks you what he should take it on correctly in purity, I'm prepared to do that. So this man told him, I don't know what he told him. I don't know what answer he gave him. But shortly after that he saw Rav Moshe fasting. So he said to him, he asked Rav Moshe, what was the correct answer to give in such a situation? So Rav Moshe said, kosher food. Definitely. Why? Beautiful understanding. It takes greatness, tremendous wisdom to be able to give an answer like that. Why? Because Rav Moshe said, it says in all the Torah sources that if a person doesn't eat kosher, he can't be sensitive to anything else. If he doesn't eat kosher, right, it's hardening his heart. He's having this shell around the heart that nothing else will penetrate. So the effect of the other mitzvahs aren't going to get inside. They're going to be tremendously limited by that. So first give him the tool, first take the body, get the outer shell sensitive so that some of the light can permeate, and then who knows, maybe he'll take on something else. Amazing thing. That's what we have to do. We need a curated sequence, and I'm emphasizing this because to talk about the mystical light of Lag BaOmer when people haven't yet motivated, when people are still living at a level where there's very little Jewish content, or very little understanding of even the most basic mitzvahs, but I can't hope to have any kosher switching on to the light that's going to happen inside. It'll be an illusion if it happens. And therefore a person needs an organized, ordered system. Just like Sfera Soima is a system that goes through the stages, one stage after another. 49 details that a person builds. First of all, a person needs to schlep the body where it hurts most and get that organized, one step after another. And after that, a person needs to become aware and switch on the light. And the mystics say that if a person wants to start that program of exercise, the place to start, or at least along with the program, is davening. Because unless you daven for the impossible, it won't happen. A person might think it's impossible to change in that way, to take on something that he didn't do before, to change a relationship that's gone bad, whatever it is that needs doing that's miraculous in the world. That's what davening is. Davening produces the miraculous. It makes Hashem himself, binds himself to do what you ask if you do it properly. And that's what a person has to know. And the Jewish people, we as a people, we have to learn from this Lag BaOmer. Yes, Hashem will be the last one that will be in this phase of the world's darkness. We have to learn and get slick and practiced at this exercise of davening. It's an exercise of crucial and critical self-awareness. It's an exercise of connection with Hashem, of knowing and feeling and experiencing the fact that He's listening and that He's about to do what you say. You have to mean it and believe it, and it will happen exactly as you ask.